There's a common misconception that therapists have their shit together and all our relationships are perfect.
Which is total bullshit.
I'm Vanessa Bennett, licensed therapist.
I'm John Kim, licensed therapist.
And this is our story.
I have a complaint.
What's up?
No, not what's up. I have a complaint.
What's that?
Oh, I thought you were like, oh, what's up? My complaint is you can't just appear into rooms. So you can't just walk into any room when I don't notice that you're in the room, not say a word, not make any noise, and just stand there knowing secretly that I'm afraid of ghosts. You have a personal story of seeing a spirit at the edge of the foot of your bed in college. And I grew up watching things like Exorcist when I was 10. So when you appear into a room and you just stand there, I look up, it takes about 3 seconds to compute. I look up, I see you, it takes about 3 seconds, and then I jump.
Okay.
I wonder if that's abuse, if you, if I've expressed many times, don't do that.
You don't make it seem like I consciously am trying to scare you. It is not my fault that you don't have a sense of awareness of people that are coming in and out of rooms.
No.
I should not have to announce myself every single time I walk into a room in my own home just because you're a wimp.
Who, first of all, that's character assassination, calling me a wimp. Who does that? Like, who actually, when you walk into a room, you say something.
Rooms. I don't like have to, you know, like sound horns and dun, da, 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 here I come, John. Like, I just walk into rooms. It's not my fault that you're always afraid of ghosts.
You enter a room, you say, hey, you enter a room. Hi, you enter a room.
Every time.
You make some kind of eye contact, some kind of acknowledgement. Here's what you do. You enter a room and you just stand there. That's the problem. All right, let's talk about how our stars line up. So I'm not a big, I love astrology. I don't know a lot about astrology. And one of the things that you had a revelation after you found out something about how my stars were lined up. So I'm an Aries. Vanessa is a Taurus, but what is it, rising or?
No, it's your sun sign.
My sun sign. Okay, so what is my sun sign and what was your revelation because you found out that I was what?
Well, first off, I want to say that for people who are listening who think that astrology is all like woo-woo bullshit, that's fine, you know, to each their own. But what I will say is it is actually based in science and it's very specific. So we're not just talking like, oh, you're an Aries, I'm a Taurus. And so we know so much. Like this is very detailed chart work that has to do with the exact moment that you were born in exactly the hemisphere, you know, where everything was lined up at that exact moment. So if you haven't actually had a reading yet, do it because it's fascinating when you actually get down to business with your full chart.
Is it science though?
It is actually, it's considered a science. And also if you're a psychology nerd in any way, like I obviously am, Carl Jung was huge into astrology actually later in his career. So much so, first off, his daughter was like a professional astrologer. But also he refused to meet with any client until he'd actually gone through their full chart because it really helped him understand the person at a very deep level in a way that he didn't feel like he could get to with them just talking. So I like to tout Carl Jung in this, like there's a reason why it's something that we pay attention to. Okay.
Wait, real quick. You know, I throw boomerangs, right? Meaning when I have conversations, I will throw a boomerang, it'll go out, fly out into the distance. And then I hope that it comes back. And then we continue where we left off. And so with your permission, I would like to throw a boomerang right now.
Okay.
Who is Carl Jung? I know you're a big fan of Carl Jung. I think a lot of people have heard his name. What exactly was his contribution? What is, and I know this overlaps with depth psychology, which is what you learned. I did not. And so let's talk about that a little bit because it's really interesting.
So Jung... If they call Freud, who most people have heard of, the father of psychology, they call Jung the mother of psychology. So Jung and Freud were actually friends. Jung looked up to Freud. Freud was much older than him. They had established a professional relationship, but also a personal one. And Jung actually looked to him as almost like a mentor for a long time until Jung disagreed with Freud around a lot of his sexual drive theories.
Right.
And so from that point, they actually had a break in their relationship quite a bit, which was actually pretty devastating to Jung. He talked about it a lot. And, you know, they didn't really agree with each other in a lot of the theoretical areas. And so they broke off. So Jung is responsible actually for a lot more than we realize. He's responsible for theories and words like persona, introvert, extrovert. I could go on and on, projections. And so he's kind of woven through the majority of what we know in the psychology world and landscape. It's just that he's not given the credit, I think, that he should be given. I do think we've had a bit of a swing towards understanding him more. People who are not necessarily adept psychology finally starting to know who he is and what his contributions were. He has much more of a feminine approach, not feminine being gendered, but feminine archetypally. Archetypes, that's another thing from Jung, the collective unconscious. And so depth psychology is really Jungian psychology. And that's the school that I went to. It was a Jungian school. It's all about the unconscious, what lies underneath. A lot of it doesn't have anything to do with what you and I see day to day. You know, very into dreams, image, metaphor, which is essentially how the unconscious speaks. It's the language.
So a question I get often is, what's the difference between the unconscious and subconscious? Would you say the subconscious is more Freud language?
Honestly, I've gotten the same thing. To be honest, at this point, they're kind of interchangeable. There used to be nuance that separated the two, but I would actually say nowadays, it doesn't really matter. They're kind of interchangeable. I use unconscious because that's what I was taught, and that's the language that Jung used.
It was like the Gordon Gekko. It was like Wall Street. It was I'm talking about the movie in the 80s. I bring everything back to the 80s. So it was the Jung was the apprentice. Freud was his mentor. And then Jung had his own ideas. Then it's almost like Jung became bigger than Freud in a way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, bigger in a very different sense, right? I mean, most of us know Freud. Most people don't know Jung. I mean, I didn't even know Jung until I was in my like late 20s. So, but everybody's heard of Freud, even if you took some kind of psychology 101 class in like undergrad, or high school.
So Jung, big advocate of dreams, big advocate of the unconscious, big advocate of astrology, stars. And also, wasn't he a big fan of the hero's journey in Joseph Campbell?
Or no? Well, yes, Joseph Campbell came after Jung. I mean, they weren't alive at the same time, really.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
But it was actually the other way around. So Campbell was a student of Jung.
Oh, right. So it's no. The answer is no, not yes.
Well, you know, the idea of archetypes obviously coming from Jung, and then the hero's journey being an archetypal pattern that we see.
Did you say yes because you're trying to protect me and you didn't want me to appear dumb?
I didn't want you to appear dumb, but also there is a connection. I mean, you weren't totally off.
Yeah, it was just
the timeline a little switched.
It was, I had the people switched. It was the opposite, right?
But yeah, Campbell is somebody that we typically know more of just because he's a little bit more current and because he wrote a lot of books that talked to or spoke to the hero's journey, right? I mean, that was actually who, oh my God, I'm totally blanking out on who did Star Wars.
Okay, this is where... I can make you feel dumb.
Well, I was born in the 80s, so you can't really make me feel that dumb.
George Lucas.
Thank you. So Lucas actually consulted with Campbell. Campbell was actually on the set for much of the production.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm a big fan of the hero's journey. It has helped me tremendously, whether I apply it to a workout or my own story. I think it's such a powerful concept. Okay. Do you hear that?
That was your boomerang.
Yes, it's coming back. So astrology and how the stars lining up, it helps us understand ourselves and each other in relationships. This is interesting. So you knew I was an Aries, and then you found out that my rising was a what? Cancer?
No, that's your moon.
My moon. Okay, so...
All right. So let me
you found out something.
That was the moon that I found out that I thought was so interesting. So I want to say, first and foremost, I am not an expert in this. My knowledge is very elementary. And it's really only been in the last few years that I've started understanding a little bit more, but I go to experts, I go to guides and friends of mine who are very well versed in this to get a deeper understanding. So if you hear this, that I say something that's bullshit or wrong and you know it, I mean, like I said, I'm preempting this conversation when I'm not an expert. So first I want to say the interesting thing about the fact that you're an Aries, if we're just talking sun signs, which is kind of like the most basic of the signs, is that when I was in my 20s, I had a spurt of quite a few guys. And I'm not saying like, oh, every guy I slept with, but it was more like guys I'd go out on dates with, guys I like met in a bar and texted back and forth with, whatever, when I was single for like 5+ years in between a couple of relationships, was every single one of them was an Aries. I mean, there was a string of like, I don't know, let's just say 10.
And guys?
Yeah, it got to the point where it was like a joke amongst my friends. Like it would literally be like, so when are you born? And they'd be like, oh, April, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, oh Jesus, you're an Aries.
How much time in between the guys, the 10 guys?
Well, like I said, I'm not saying every single one that I slept with. It might've been like a guy I met in a bar or whatever, that I just had a connection with. But the point is that every one of them was an Aries at some point in my life. And so there's definitely, they say that Taurus and Aries have very, fiery sexual chemistry.
Oh yeah,
so 100%. There's something about the Aries that I'm attracted to, obviously.
You've slept with more people than I have, hands down.
Hands down, Jesus, that's a bold statement.
Well, you said 10, and I was thinking, oh, well, that's probably the total of my whole.
Well, anyway, that's not my number, but yes, I have probably slept with more people than you have.
Aries, they were a lot of Aries, fiery, big ego. Aries have ego. Aries, leaders.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What else?
So
hot-tempered.
Yeah, you tend to be very assertive, persistent. You also have like a natural courage. You're very courageous.
Thank you.
Independent. There's a lot of like enthusiasm and energy. And for me, I mean, there's a lot of similarities actually in our sun signs as far as like stubbornness, stability. But Taurus tends to be a lot more practical. You know, there's a lot of stability in my sign. And they tend to be known for their sensual pleasure. Like we have a very big desire for sensual pleasure. So, physical, tangible pleasures, you know, they say like nice fabrics and, you know, beautiful jewelry and things like that. Like we're very of the earth.
When you say we, cause I'm an Aries, you're a Taurus. Are you saying
I'm
yourself?
Saying we as in Tauruses.
Oh, got it. Yeah. That makes sense. I don't care about fabrics at all. I care about thread count and that's about it.
So here, I'll, if you guys don't know, there's actually this awesome app called, hang on, I just had it up. It is called CoStar. And so CoStar is cool because it's actually updated daily. But what I love about it is that you can put somebody in and actually get a very detailed reading on their different signs. So like you were referring to, so your moon sign, your rising sign, you know, where Mercury is in your chart, and how that actually correlates between the two of you. So I have it open because I reference it occasionally. So if we're talking about just our sun signs, it says, and let me say that you and I pretty much across the board, except for opposite. One house or opposite.
The two of you have extremely mismatched ways of moving through the world. You love leisure time while they prefer a quick paced and adventurous lifestyle. They could help you step outside of your comfort zone while you teach them about patience and precaution. You share an unwavering loyalty that could lead to a lasting bond, but only if you are
able to resolve
your differences. This is pretty much true. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. And that's things that, you know, make me uncomfortable, but also things about you I've had to learn to appreciate and learn from.
Yeah.
So the moon, this was the big revelation for me. So my moon is in Libra and your moon is in Cancer.
Hmm.
So your moon sign is usually what rules your inner world. So it's your emotions, your feelings, your moods. This is actually typically how you think of yourself. The sun sign is almost like how the world perceives you, whereas your moon sign is usually how you perceive yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you're alone or, you know, at your most comfortable. So my moon being in Libra, right? So when you think of Libra, most people know that sun sign. That's the one with the balance, right? It's the scale. So it's all about balance. It's all about seeing both sides. And they say here actually that there's an indecisiveness and a desperation to please, which feels a little right. But also tending to hide your feelings and needs, which also feels about right. So Cancer is a water sign. Cancer tends to be the most emotional of all the signs. So the fact that your moon is in Cancer, which is your emotional self, is very telling to me, right? So there's a lot of sensitivity there. There's a lot of thoughtfulness and empathy, which is great. But it says here, they have a tendency to feel like a martyr and secretly fear being abandoned by those they love. They often have trouble letting things go and can feel like an emotional wreck.
Didn't you look at and research all of this when we first started dating?
Yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit further in. As far as the moon sign revelation, that was maybe a few months in, but it definitely helped me understand you better.
Did you say, oh, you know what, our stars don't line up. Maybe I shouldn't pursue this.
No, I don't take it as that black and white. I think it's more about an understanding, right? Mm-hmm. So I looked at this and said, oh, there's learning here. There's learning and growth to be had with this person. But here are the challenges that I'm going to have to be very aware of and potentially learn to work through with this person.
So with Mercury, you're Aries, I'm Pisces, no?
Yes. So Mercury is the planet of communication.
Right.
So it's all about how we take in and process information, and also how we communicate outward as well. It's also the planet of learning. So yeah, mine is in Aries actually.
Yeah, your Mercury is in Aries, meaning your intellect is quick, independent, impatient, energetic, and direct. You think fast and start conversations with enthusiasm. You're likely TL. Your Mercury is in Pisces.
You.
That's me. My intellect is emotionally driven, dreamy, and a bit in the clouds. That's totally me. I sometimes call myself the Korean blonde. No offense to anyone with blonde hair. Vanessa, you have blonde hair.
I have blonde hair.
My imagination and intuition keeps me open to other people's ideas. We're good listeners, though we may have a tendency for white lies. I don't know if that's true. We prefer face-to-face communication. That's very true. You don't understand each other. You don't really understand how each other thinks. You may have to make some adjustments to how you naturally communicate. So this is interesting because I communicate, if I feel something, it's already out of my mouth before the feeling is even,
processed.
Vanessa feels something, takes her 2.5 years, and then she writes an email. And then after that, we sit down and have a conversation.
I mean, you're being dramatic, but yes, we have a very different communication style. Mm-hmm.
And it might just be because, you know, the way I put the cereal away.
Well, it's not the cereal. It's more about like, you know, how you don't fold the dish towels, things like that.
Right. So two very different communication styles. I do admit I need to process more instead of vomiting. I always thought that we have a responsibility to express ourselves. I think I sometimes take it too far. I've learned over the years that there are things that we maybe don't need to share. You know, there are some things that we need to sit with. And I mean, by we, I mean me. There's some things that don't have to be said, right? And that's what I'm learning a lot about is how much do you, like pick your battles. I don't want to say battles, but express what you need to express, but evaluate your expression instead of just saying, you know, I feel this, I feel that, I feel, you know, constantly.
Well, I think pretty early on in our relationship, we actually had a conversation about this where we both came to the idea or dubbed this responsible communication, which I've actually used that term with clients. And it's this idea of using discernment, right? So every thought or emotion that enters you should not then be vomited out onto your partner. And this is tricky because if you're like me and you struggle with codependency, you struggle with expressing any of your feelings and emotions until it gets to the point where it boils over and you explode. And so telling somebody to be discerning when they already struggle is a bit tricky, but the point is that, you know, there are some feelings and emotions that are our responsibility for working through on our own, processing on our own, you know, owning our shit kind of thing. And then bringing it to the other person really when it makes sense. So, well, that's a tricky thing to say. So let's see, how do I break this down? Not make sense in the sense of like, you've gone off and figured it out and then you present it to your partner with a pretty bow, but make sense as in don't vomit on your partner and bring them down into your muck if you don't really understand what the need is that you're trying to communicate. Does that make sense?
Right. Yes. And I have always felt like if you don't talk about it in the moment that, you know, where that it needs to be brought up, then you are leaving the relationship. And that's not true. It's because some people just need time to process because we don't all process the same.
Right.
I have a, another metaphor, and if you're a writer listening to this, it may help you. Glennon Doyle mentions the difference between a diary or journal, a private journal, and a memoir. And a private journal is just you vomiting your feelings on paper, right? It's for you, not for other people. A memoir is taking those feelings and then crafting them in a way where at the end there's wisdom, there's knowledge, right? There's a takeaway. And I love that. As a writer myself, I get that, you know, as someone who's been blogging, and I've done both, right? I've just blogged, just randomly put my feelings on paper, hit post, no one got anything out of it. And then I've also, you know, put thought into blog posts where people do get something out of it, hopefully. And so that might be an interesting way to look at communication. If you are just writing verbally, expressing your diary to your partner, there's an irresponsibility in that because there isn't much takeaway other than them now feeling, you know, the carrying your energy or complaints or whatever burdensome and all that. If you take your diary and you actually sit, process it, and then it comes out more as a memoir, and that's what you're communicating to them, then now they have a measure of where you're at emotionally, but also they can now take away something about the relationship or they learned about, you know, you, them, whatever. So if you're communicating memoir over diary is my point.
The Gottmans say, it's very important that you are specific about your need in a positive way. So not to like sugarcoat, but not saying to somebody, you know, this is what I hate this, but rather sitting with that feeling of like, okay, this came up, this hurt me, whatever. And then turning it and saying, this hurt me. And here's what I need from you. Here's what you could do for me differently. Otherwise it does feel a little bit like a diary, right? Like you're vomiting.
Yeah. And this is, you know, communication 101, but I statements, you know, most people, hey, you're that, you made me feel that, but bringing it back to you and it's, this is how I feel. This is what it was like for me, all of that.
Okay. Should we go on to Venus?
Yes. Venus is, Venus determines how and what you love. It indicates how you express affection and the qualities you're attracted to. So, your Venus is Taurus, right? And my Venus is Aries.
Which is interesting. So I have to pause on this. Both our sun signs and our Venus are in Taurus and Aries, which is important to understand because Venus too, archetypally, Venus is Aphrodite. Venus is the goddess of love, of sexuality, of sensuality. Yeah. So there's a lot that goes into Venus, but I actually think it's fascinating that both of our sun signs and our Venus are in the same.
Well, my Venus is fire, Aries.
Mm-hmm, and my Venus is earth. Taurus actually is right. the sign of Aphrodite. I mean, this is the earthy sign that the goddess of love is in. So do you want me to read this?
Is this why you like making love outdoors in the grass?
That's weird. I mean, no offense to people who like that, but I don't know if that's my thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so my Venus is in Taurus, right? Meaning my romantic side is oriented towards comfort and stability. I move slowly and deliberately at the beginning of relationships, and the timidity sometimes comes off as intimidating. I just want something sweet and simple. And then your Venus is an Aries, meaning your romantic side is enthusiastic, impulsive, and direct. You fall in love quickly and out of love just as fast.
Oh man, wow.
You tend to be forthright and direct with your crushes, even if they haven't confessed, which makes a lot of inside jokes, touch them a lot and maintain eye contact. You alternate between seeming demanding and disinterested in the relationship.
You know, so I haven't read this, right? This is something that she just texted to me as an outline for this episode. And so this really lands for me. I want to read it again because I feel like I was just, the universe just held up a mirror. My romantic side is enthusiastic, impulsive, and direct. Impulsive for sure, enthusiastic and direct. I fall in love quickly and I fall out of love just as fast. So for me, falling out of love just as fast, like I haven't heard that, you know, it's so bluntly. And I tend to be forthright and direct with my crushes. I think that's true. I have no problem saying I like you. Even if I know they have no interest in me, I still have no problem saying I like you. And what is this? I make a lot of inside jokes. Touch. What does that even mean?
It means I think as part of your love language, like making inside jokes and having that inside connection with a person that other people don't know.
Oh, I thought it meant like I make fun of you, but without telling you, but I'm talking to myself a lot. No, inside jokes as in we have some, so I enjoy something that we have on the inside that the world doesn't know about, but it's our thing. Yeah, that's actually very true.
You're a big toucher.
Touch them a lot. It sounds a little creepy. Mm-hmm. I do like touching people a lot that I choose to love. And then I maintain eye contact, which is strange, but yes. And I alternate between seeming demanding and disinterested in the relationship. So let me ask you this. What do you think of this as far as me and how accurate is it?
Well, for anybody who listened to the first episode, we talked about the idea of your 3-year relationship mm-hmm. itch. So this idea of falling in love quickly and out of love just as fast.
Yeah.
On point. I think
you could take out the word little.
I think the idea of you alternating between demanding and disinterested is also interesting because we talked about your
hot and cold.
Yeah, the hot and cold.
Yeah. Can I just say though, like knowing this about myself, it's not an excuse to then put it on, you know, the stars, but it makes me feel less crazy. You know what I'm saying? I feel like, oh, it's in my wiring. It's in my blood. It's in my, whatever you want to call it. It's not just me being indecisive or inappropriate or me being, you know.
Well, I think what's important about this stuff is it gives you a clue into the way that you're wired so that you can then understand it better and also work to, I don't want to say correct behaviors, but work to maybe have more healthier behaviors. So like, if you know that you fluctuate, or you know that you, like it says, like you alternate between being demanding and disinterested. Like if you know that's kind of how you're wired, then you can pay more attention to it. And when you find yourself maybe in that phase of disinterest, you know, feeling disinterested, you can call yourself on it. You can check in with yourself and say, oh, I feel like I'm a little withdrawn right now. What can I do to maybe connect to my partner? You know, or the reverse, if you're feeling demanding, it's like, oh, what am I putting on them and expecting them to hold and take responsibility for, which is actually my responsibility.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Absolutely. And would you say that, wouldn't one argue that if this is your position, and it's not your choosing, right? This is because of when you were born. It's stuff that happened that is bigger than you. It almost feels like it would take more work for me to be in something because of my disposition than it would someone whose Venus was not in Aries.
Maybe, but it also depends on the person that you're with, right? It's kind of like we all have triggers, but they get triggered differently by different people. Other people are going to ignite certain things in you or are going to trigger certain responses in you that others won't. So, you know, certain people could make you more demanding and certain people could make you more disinterested. Like, I think it just depends on the other person.
If any ex is listening to this, do you ever think an ex is going to find these episodes? If any ex is listening to this, they probably just had it. Oh, I get it now. I get why you bounced after 3 years or whatever I did. The ambivalence or the falling in and out of love and all of that.
Well, I think what's interesting also, again, it's about how the two play off of each other. So if you're looking at mine, right, and my Venus being in Taurus, I'm all about comfort and stability, right? That's romance to me, is feeling safe and secure and stable.
Right, right.
And if you tend to alternate between demanding, disinteresting, being, you know, falling in love, out of love, that doesn't go well with stability and comfort.
Yeah. My romance is a Korean drama.
Yeah, exactly.
Which
is the opposite.
Right. So here's the thing. And it says here that you find it difficult to express love for each other and to have to do some work to make the other feel loved. So we are, according to this, our Venus, our magnets are flipped, right? So how do we, knowing this about ourselves, how do we meet in the middle? How do we make it so this is not a crowbar in our relationship, but a bridge? You like that?
I do.
Say that again. That was kind of sexy the way you said
I do.
It's 8:30 a.m. by the way, guys.
I think that it's understanding and owning your part, right? And then I think it's understanding the other person. So that if I know that even though safety, security, stability is how I feel loved and express love, if it's not how you express love, it's kind of like love languages, right? There is a certain part that I have to get out of my comfort zone and maybe be a little bit more spur of the moment. I might have to be a little bit more enthusiastic, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order for you to feel loved. So it sometimes is about making yourself uncomfortable for the sake of the other person feeling.
Putting your sexy voice on at 8:30 a.m. on a Monday.
Right.
And then for me, and you know, this whole do the work thing, which has now become the new buzzword. Anytime there's a wellness buzzword, I just cringe and I make sure that I don't use it. But the whole do the work thing, right? What is the work and all of that? This is it. It's not reading a gazillion is a lot of self-help books or taking video courses or, you know, retreats and all that. This is the work, knowing your wiring, understanding your patterns, you know, your shortcomings, and then trying to do the opposite of that, you know, trying to, so in my case, if I have a habit of falling in and out of love, like, what do I do with that? What's the action? What's the intention? You know, what do I need to sit with? That's what's hard, right? It's not, the work isn't just information. Like, you listening to this podcast and having revelations, that is not the work. That is the beginning, that maybe even 50%. It's the other half, which is really hard. And that's the execution. And I compare a lot to fitness. You know, a lot of people are like, okay, it's a new year, I'm going to, you know, get fit, and then they sign up for all these programs, and they're, you know, scientifically proven, and then they buy all the fancy workout gear. They set themselves up for an opportunity to change their bodies, but then actually going to the gym or wherever they're going, that, because that's the work, actually sweating, actually moving, actually, you know, doing the burpees or the rowing or the whatever. That's the hard part. It's not the preparation or the knowledge. And so
this is why I typically stop going to the gym for the month of January or going to yoga for the month of January, because it's so packed with people that are like, new year, new you, that usually I wait until February when all those people have dropped off. And then I go back to my normal, you know, doing my thing, which is like consistent, slow and steady.
Can you never do that new year, new you voice again?
New year, new you.
So
that was my marketing days coming out. I actually did a campaign called New Year, New You.
Vanessa used to be a cheerleader back in the day in Syracuse, New York, which makes complete sense. Okay. So, but you were a cheerleader, but you were kind of like in the competitive cheerleading, not just cheerleading, football games. Or were you just cheerleading football games?
Well, most cheerleading is competitive. I mean, it's very rare that you'll it's very rare that you'll have cheerleaders that just go to games. I mean, part of cheerleading is competing with other teams and going around the state and competing at like national levels, state levels. Yes, it's part of cheerleading.
My high school cheerleaders were just, you know, doing pom-poms at football games. That was it.
I disagree with you. If you looked into their program, I guarantee they were traveling.
I'm just saying my high school.
No, but I still disagree with you. I bet you anything they were also competing. You just didn't know about it.
You also worked at Hooters.
I feel like you're attacking me right now for some reason.
Which I actually love. I say that to brag. I say that. I know that sounded like an attack. It was partly just shock value, but I actually love that about your story. Did you not want to share that with everyone?
There's a lot of people I do not tell that to. Yes.
Oh man. Well, hopefully that will not be edited out, but
I don't want to rip out pages of my story, as you say. This is long before the Me Too movement. But yes, when I was younger, I worked at Hooters for many years and as a bartender for many years. And I, especially in my late teens, early 20s, when I was coming into myself and understanding my sexuality, I used it in a lot of ways.
And yeah, but here's the thing. I don't know if you're okay with it, because I love that. I think it's great. And I know now you're definitely not like that, but almost to the point where you kind of swung the other way.
I mean, I don't walk around wearing garbage bags.
No, but you also don't walk around like wearing... you know, like short shorts and push-up bras and stuff.
Well, I'm also closer to 40 at this point than I am to 20. So no, I don't walk around wearing push-up bras and short shorts.
But there's a middle.
Which is the middle? Don't you think that's where I live?
I think you live a little bit to the, a few inches toward the garbage bags.
I'm going to contest this, because you're from LA. So no offense to LA people out there, but LA has never really been known for fashion or style.
That's true.
I'm from New York, where it's super high fashion. And so for me, I tend to live more in the fashion, and the way that people perceive me can be fucked. It's more about being fashion forward and like style rather than like sex and push-up bras.
Yeah.
It's a very different approach to style than LA.
I think on a deeper level, it's not, it's like, on a deeper level, I think I just, gravitate toward, or maybe it's not even that deep. Maybe it's just locker rooms and me growing up in LA, being used to that more so than fashion.
I think so. I think so. And I think you and I, not just fashion, I think you and I, you know, somewhat funny, we were a lot different just because of where we're from, right? Like East Coast, West Coast is a real difference culturally.
I want to say I love that you used to work at Hooters. I'm proud of it. I used to work at Islands. I don't know if it's the same. It's not the same. But I love that. There's nothing. When you say that, I'm almost like, oh, it's almost like you were a college cheerleader, or you were, or like, let's say you were, you know, on a calendar, or you were in Maxim or something. Anything like that to me is like, that's amazing. That's great. I love it. I'm proud of it. As your man. Yeah. Anyway.
I'm not proud of it.
Good. You shouldn't be. So this card lands for me the most, the Venus, and I'm going to keep it in my phone. You want to go to Mars?
Sure. Let's go to Mars.
All right.
So my Mars is in Scorpio.
And mine is Aquarius.
Yeah. So Mars is the planet of aggression. It determines how we assert ourselves, how we take action, our energy. And it's particular in your sex life, how ambitious you are, and also when you feel anger.
How does ambition ripple in your sex life? What does that mean?
Well, when you think of the feeling of ambitiousness, there's this feeling of like, get out there, take charge, move forward.
Oh.
Forward momentum to ambitiousness. So I think the idea of the energy of ambition and the energy of sex, I can totally feel the relation there.
Do you think that we are compatible, or we are opposites in there? We're both ambitious.
I don't think we're opposites, but I don't think we're exactly the same. I think we can find a middle, but it takes work.
Yeah. So my Mars is in Scorpio, meaning...
No, mine is.
Yours is in Scorpio. Oh, okay, sorry. Oh, yeah. So your Mars is in Scorpio, meaning you assert yourself in a way that is serious and incisive, and you push things forward with passion and intensity. Once you decide what you want to do something, you don't hold back.
Mm-hmm. Which is very on point for me. So
yeah.
Again, this is not just about sex, right? Mars is all about, it's the action oriented planet. And so it's how you step forward and take action in the world and life and work and love and all the things, right? So I am very serious. I am very incisive. So I make a lot of, I research things, I plan things, I plot things. And so there's incisiveness behind what I do. And once I decide to move forward, I do so with passion, with intensity, and I don't stop until I have something. So if I really decide this is something I want to do, I do not stop until I have it.
Mm. Yeah. And I could attest to that. There's been times you said, okay, this is what you're going to do to me at this time.
Oh, you're talking about sex.
Or I mean, that's one part. My Mars is in Aquarius, meaning I assert myself in a way that is unconventional and rebellious. Oh my God, that's so true. that's my career basically, right? Mm-hmm. And I push things forward with unique independence. Ooh, what does that mean, unique independence?
You don't tend
color outside lines.
Yeah, and I would say you don't tend to need a bunch of team members supporting you. Like you're independent. You move forward and you assert yourself with independence, right? You can be on your own.
So with Mars, we don't have particularly compatible senses of passion. There's a lens of spark between us.
There's less of a spark between you two.
Oh, sorry. I'm 47. My eyes are shot. I can't read shit
there's
anymore.
There's less of a spark between you and more of a sputtering glimmer.
That is so horrible. Glimmer?
I like the word glimmer.
Sputtering sounds... Oh my God, it sounds very pathetic. Like a broken sprinkler.
Or like a car, like an old car that's breaking down.
That's our relationship, a broken sprinkler or an old car that's broken down.
Well, it's a sense of passion, right? So how we move forward in our sense of passion, again, sex just being one component.
Yeah.
There's a glimmer. I see, but I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier about there's a glimmer, meaning like we catch glimpses of it.
We catch
glimmers of it. And if we can act on it and catch it in the moment, we actually do find connection and compatibility in it.
And that's, you know, and here's the $1 million question, is a question I get all the time. Can you then feed that and grow it, right? Or is our disposition just, you know, without like how we're wired, and especially right now we're talking about stars, is it doomed, or is it not growable? Anyone who under the category of Mars is a Scorpio and then their partner in Aquarius, if they're reading this card, for example, this can be very discouraging when it says there's less of a spark between you two and more of a sputtering glimmer. Like, how can anyone read that and think, oh, this is good, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I look at it as a challenge.
Well, if you don't, then your relationship will be a broken sprinkler.
Yeah, a welcome challenge. Let me clear that up.
Yeah. Okay, we have a couple more cards here. Jupiter, she is a Capricorn and I'm Aquarius.
Right, so Jupiter is big. So when you think of Jupiter, right, it's the largest planet. Jupiter is all about expansion. It's all about making things happen. It also says it is idealism, optimism, and it's where philosophy comes into play. So it's big thinking.
Oh, and so your Jupiter is in Capricorn, meaning you grow and find understanding through responsibility, practicality, ambition, seriousness, efficiency, rationality, and power. My Jupiter is in Aquarius, meaning we grow through finding understanding through detached analysis and intellectual pursuits. What does that mean? Detached analysis and intellectual.
I think it means that you're in your head a lot.
Yes, that's true.
I think that you analyze things in a detached way. So you stand back, you observe, you're in your head, you're making an analysis of something. And you're constantly pursuing something that's coming out of your head from the intellect.
I would say you are definitely more in your body. I'm definitely more in my head. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like it's a generalization, but isn't that also a gender thing? Don't you think men in generally are more in their heads and women are more in their bodies?
I think it just has to do with socialization. I don't think it's a gender thing. I think it's how we socialize the genders. So we socialize women to be more feeling based and we socialize men to be more thinking based.
Yeah. You grow and dream in different ways and you may find you have to do some work to understand each other. That's really vague. That's vague.
Story of our lives.
Yeah. But I mean, that could be applied to any relationship, to be honest. Okay, the final card is Saturn. She is a Scorpio and I am a Gemini. Mm-hmm. So the other social planet Saturn rules responsibility, restrictions, limits, boundaries, fears, and self-discipline. Her Saturn is in Scorpio, meaning she struggles with passion, intensity, malicious intentions. You know, I went to grad school. Obsessive thinking and suspiciousness. You're not a suspicious person.
I don't think generally, but.
No, not at all. My Saturn is in Gemini, meaning I struggle with a lack of focus, which is true. Just listen to any of my videos or podcasts. Restless energy and getting bored easily.
Sounds about right.
I gotta say though, in the last 5 years, boredom has not been in my vocabulary. I don't get bored anymore. I used to get bored all the time. And then I'm a lot more mindful. I'm a lot more, I have the ability to seek nectar in moments now. And that has made me not experience boredom as much.
So I think with age and growth comes a deeper understanding of yourself and the negative qualities that can be represented by these archetypal forces. Whereas when you're young, it's more about the tail wagging the dog, right? So they have more control over you. And so, yes, I don't think you struggle with boredom as much, but I still see the restless energy and the lack of focus. I see you dipping into it, but I see that you now have a deeper understanding and more control of it. And that would be the same with mine, what it says about me and Scorpio. So this, when I read this, you might read this and say, this isn't you at all. But when I read this, I say, this is me in my 20s, hands down.
Right, because we change.
Yeah. Right. So this idea of intensity, malicious intentions, obsessive thinking, suspiciousness, I could totally feel this in my like teens, 20s, but maybe not so much now.
Right? So you used to go through your boyfriend's phones, just not anymore.
No, I've never done that. I have a very, very strict rule about reading people's phones or personal property.
You used to stalk your exes, just not anymore.
Nope, never did that either.
Your struggles, meaning both of us, are fairly different, but with empathy, we can help each other grow. Mm-hmm. That's a nice little ending.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So here's what I think is interesting and what I think is valuable when it comes to all these signs. I didn't know there were so many different signs. I thought you were just one sign, like I'm an Aries, but you know, the rising, the dropping, whatever, the moon and all the Mars. When you can get a 360 view of all your signs, I mean, just even with this app, it's been very helpful for me to, especially that one card, it's been very helpful for me to look at myself more in an honest way.
Yeah, agreed. So I'm just going to read this one little synopsis that it gives you. So between the two of you, right? So the where you have harmony and where you have challenges. So we find harmony that we're very smart together. So I've been told this actually by a couple different people who have read our charts, meaning in the area of work, we're actually like an amazing dynamic duo.
Do you think with me in your life, you're smarter?
Sure. Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
I think you bring out the best in me and the worst in me, which I think makes me smarter.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
So our harmony is that we're smart together and we do have mutual attraction. And then our challenges are unrealistic expectations, delusion and bad habits, jealousy and judgment, and power struggles or hopelessness.
I don't think jealousy and judgment, do you feel that in our relationship? I mean, if I was younger, for sure, but not now.
Yeah, I think if you're looking at the idea of judgment, maybe more than jealousy, I could see it creeping in from time to time.
I would say we're both stubborn. Mm-hmm. We both have horns. So when we don't agree, both of us, we don't let go of the rope, the tug of rope.
I think where I'm thinking judgment is like, you don't do things the way that I do things. And right. So naturally there's a moment of judgment there, rather than softening into, it's okay that you do things differently. Can I respect, honor that in you? And then also, what can I learn from that? I think we get there, but I think the initial go-to is the judgment.
I'm letting go of and totally okay with you returning things that cost $5-6 and spending half the day doing that. That's your journey. I'm letting go of that. Announcing it to the world today.
Let go of that rope, John. I am very frugal and I do not like to waste things. So I like to return things when they need to be returned.
Vanessa will drive an hour and a half to return something that costs $3. And I'm telling her, you're going to waste your day. Just let it, just eat the $3 and she will not.
It makes me feel better. Just give that to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, did you decide or not decide to enter rooms silently knowing that I may be afraid?
I don't do this intentionally. I literally just show up in a room. It is not my fault that you are terrified of everything and that you jump when I walk into a room. So I'm not going to start announcing myself unless you want to buy me like a really cool, I don't know, like trumpet or something that I can just like carry with me on my belt. And every time I walk into a room, I can be like, dun, 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 dun.
So okay. That's exaggeration. That's exaggeration.
I wish you guys could have seen his face the other day.
You're also being very, that's exactly why you do it, because that's the reward. That's the reward.
I have been told by many, many people, and I use these words very specifically, that I am a ninja. Those are words that have been used to describe me in the past.
People have called me a ninja too, but they were racist.
They're just fake racist.
Yeah.
I move quietly. And I don't realize I move quietly. And so I have been told that I am a ninja in the past, but you are the first
right.
person that's been like, you need to announce yourself every time you come into a room.
Well, if people have told you that, wouldn't you be like, me being a ninja can actually startle someone. That's something that I should do less of.
No, a ninja's awesome.
All right, guys, this is exactly what we are talking about with two horn signs bumping heads. Okay. Well, thank you for listening, guys. Hope that was helpful in some way. And Vanessa, I'll see you in 2 seconds. Hey, before you go, if you want to engage with Vanessa or I live, we both teach in the TAT Lab. The TAT Lab is live virtual wellness classes, all using Zoom. These are not video courses. These are live groups and classes. A team of experts with lots of experience and also their own stories, teaching everything from healing trauma to Vanessa teaches codependency. We have attachment styles, relationship classes. I do something called Ask Angry, and that is basically a giant check-in. We've got book clubs. We've got meditations. Come check us out at TAT-Lab. That's TAT-Lab.com. And get a week for free and come say hi to me and Vanessa.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.